Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles. I still
remember. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to explore the latest cutting edge in how to live a longer and healthier life. We're going to begin with the latest on University of Jena, that's in Germany, an aquatic plant called duckweed that could become a source of protein and omega-3 fatty acids for all the people living in Southeast Asia. And then we'll explore how the Western diet leads to overeating and obesity, University of California research. And we're going to talk about the health benefits of blue corn from a major university in Mexico, Veracruz, and how exercise and diet could actually offset the effects of malaria, University of Texas, and a lot more on health and healing. Then today I'm going to spend extra time exploring the significance of environmental issues. For example, and I thought you'd really enjoy this, a forest ranger explains how trees have social networks and very complex relationships. That's correct. Trees actually protect each other, sometimes even more than humans do. So Brianna Acquista from Natural Blaze. Then from Professor Carl Grossman, man I have a lot of respect for. Good work, Carl. Good work to the thousands of activists living in the greater New York area who fought to close Indian Point. We have won. The end of Indian Point and the myths of nuclear power in America, from Counterpunch and Carl Grossman. So for all of you who were outside the governor's office, the largest demonstration in the history of a governor's office in New York City, thousands of people from my audience were there. It made a difference. When we demonstrated outside of Indian Point, it made a difference. And all of the petitions and all the lobbying, it made a difference. So we won. Unprecedented polar melting is unfolding, and huge differences. Do you know that this week in Tennessee, they had a community that was at 71 degrees and went to below zero within one day? A 70-degree drop in temperature in one day. Well, that's not the worst. A lot's happening around the world. And I believe as long as we know what is happening, what's likely to happen, then that's actually good news, because then we can make appropriate and proper and timely decisions of how to get out of harm's way. From Dar Jamel, Truth Out. The polar melting unfolds as climate disruption denial goes wild. And also, let's see if we get those, because there's several more I want to talk about, but that's enough. And then from our audio clips, I don't know how many of these we will be able to get to, but I definitely want to get to Glenn Greenwald talking about Bill Maher, Keith Olbermann, and tribalism and the so-called resistance. And also, we're going to have Chris Hedges, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, talk about the leaked supposed Russian emails and what's really behind it. Why are they doing all this? It's not because Russia hacked some emails. It's because they want to destroy Trump. He'll tell you his position on this. And from Reality Check, Nobel Peace Prize winner President Barack Obama drops 26,171 bombs on 7 different Muslim nations in the last 12 months. Well, now that's a ticket to get people to like you. And also, when we hear how the economy is great, it's turned around, then you're not seeing the people in the communities I am. Another nail in America's economic coffin. Both Macy's and Sears announced closure of many stores across America, resulting in thousands of jobs lost. Why aren't we talking about this? The resident does. So that's our program. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. We always like to start with something that will help people. I'm trying to get as many people aware of how important it is for their health and the healthy environment to go to a healthy plant-based diet, get off animal proteins, even if they have to do it gradually. Some people can do a cold turkey. Other people, it may take them months, even a year. But if the goal is to get Americans to shift from a meat-based to a plant-based diet, it's worth it. This is from the University of Jena, J-E-N-A, in Germany. Quote, duckweed has long been consumed as an inexpensive protein and source of omega-3 in 3 Southeast Asian countries. But now researchers are seeing about the Western diet, which is not working for them. They're destroying massive amounts of land to grow soybeans, to feed the cattle and pigs, and to feed their growing appetite for westernized meals, which then causes obesity and diabetes and heart disease. It's just a very vicious cycle. But this duckweed, which has been used in Thailand and Cambodia and Burma and Laos, it's used in salads. If you've ever been in those areas of the world, they have some most exotic foods. If you sit down, especially in Thailand, you'll have a salad. It's not in a deep bowl. It's like in a large platter. And it could be 2 feet across. I've seen them that big. And they have all these edible flowers and all these aromas coming off the natural flower. And these are delicious. And you dip these into different sauces that are on the platter. And then you finger eat. These are all finger eat foods, which is kind of an interesting construct on grounding your hands, your tastes. We know that when we take our shoes and socks off and we put our feet on the ground, especially on the dirt, it's really good for our whole body, the energy that we absorb from the earth. It helps. But when you're actually handling your food with your fingers, it's also good. So that's how they eat there frequently. And then they have different rices, multiple types of rices. But they have this particular duckweed, and duckweed is rich in amino acids. It's way up there. And it's aquatic. And this is according to the Food Chemistry Journal. Quote, with our recent report, we want to contribute to this issue to have a broader view. We investigated 6 species representing all 5 genres of the duckweed and recently rediscovered a new one. We looked at it at dry weight, protein, fat, starch, the amino acids, and the fatty acids. And they found that it's extremely rich in minerals, antioxidants, the carotenoids, the tocopherols and the phytosterols and fiber. And they found that the was very high in protein, 35% by dry weight. That's really high. That's comparable to the leptins and peas, and it's up there, and good in omega-3 fatty acids. Just something to share, because once you see that you have something that you can grow in enormous quantities, that you've been growing for a long time, hundreds of years, and that you could then eat that instead of eating the animal protein. So that's the takeaway message. So we're now looking at ways of growing vegetables and tubers and grains and beans and nuts and seeds to replace meat in the diet. And they got a good head start there. Next up, we're looking at why a lot of people are overweight, and this University of California, here's what it says. More than 2 in 3 adults in the United States are considered overweight or obese, with substantial biomedical and clinical evidence suggesting that chronic overconsumption of a Western diet, the foods consisting of high levels of sugar and fat, is a major cause of this epidemic. New research by scientists at the University of California, Riverside, now shows that chronic consumption of a Western diet leads to overeating and obesity due to elevations in peripheral endocannabinoid signaling. And this is in the brain, where you start eating something. Well, the takeaway message is, if you're eating certain foods, especially fat foods and sugar foods, the body begins to crave it. The brain sends out signals, I want that food. And then this person has this uncontrollable desire to eat that food. This was published in Physiology and Behavior. So how do we break this habit? Well, we do it in 3 ways. One, we begin to look at a food for what it is. It's functional. Now, what exactly is this food supposed to do in my body? Well, if it's in the fruit family, it's supposed to provide you with antioxidants and phytonutrients that will help slow down the aging process, trap free radicals, and repair and rejuvenate your DNA that has been damaged. All good. If it's the grains and legumes, nuts and seeds, they give us high-quality amino acids. They give us the building blocks, a protein, to allow us to be stronger, have muscle mass, so we don't shrink and lose our stamina and strength, and that's good. And they also give us essential fatty oils, which are good for our heart and our arteries and our joints. Vegetables help us in detoxification and cleansing. They chelate out heavy metals. That's good. So these are all good. And you're eating them because you know you're being healthier when you do. But the standard American diet, the SAD diet, only promotes disease. There is nothing good about it. And therefore, when you have your bacon and eggs or your coffee and toast or you have your hamburger, it's all bad. So the idea is when we're consuming these empty calories, and we're not exercising, we're sedentary, and we're sitting for more than 2 hours at a time, our metabolism goes into a lower notch. In which case, then, even eating the same amount of calories, we're going to gain weight. So after a meal, every meal, go for a walk. Let's understand why. Because we don't want to run, we don't want to exercise, but we don't want to be a couch potato and eat and then go sit down. We want to get up and do a light walk, ideally for 1 to 2 miles, because that stimulates blood flow, it stimulates digestive acids, it's helped with the peristalsis in the digestive system. It moves that food mass that we're digesting through the intestine, facilitating greater absorption, utilization, and elimination. So then when we come back from our walk, our digestion is enhanced. We don't feel bloated or overfull. There's a lightness of being. It's all important. So that's what I would add to that study they just did. And it's no surprise that the important part of that study was that they're now saying that we have opiate-like receptors in the brain that you can feed. So when you're feeding them the saturated, deep-fried, fatty foods like French fries or pizzas, you are doing your body a disservice because then, in effect, you become addicted to the food, and hence you crave the food. You crave a sugar. You crave something salty and crunchy, soft and sweet. And so it's no different than someone who is taking a drug, someone who gets addicted to painkillers, the opiates. So we have to break that. Now, juicing will help us in breaking these. So the more green juices, and always have about 16 ounces of a light green juice, a highly alkalizing juice like celery and cucumber. That's terrific. And then have maybe 2 ounces of more concentrated juices, your dark vegetables, chard, parsley, kale, spinach, arugula. Those are all fine, but only in diluted amounts. And a great, great detoxifying juice, one of the best you can have, is watermelon with lemon. Also, a new study out of the University of Veracruz in Mexico shows that blue corn, which we could have in the United States, we could grow it here. I've grown blue corn. And you can go to the farmer's market or food co-op and get it. People think of it as a decoration. It's not. It's extremely nutritious. Here's what they say. A new study shows that a metabolic syndrome-fed, high-sugar, high-cholesterol diet, then given blue corn maize extract, showed significant improvement in systolic blood pressure, high-density lipoprotein, that's a good cholesterol, cholesterol overall, triglycerides levels. So, and the natural antioxidants present in the blue maize may help protect against metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and cancer, raising interest in using the maize, blue maize, as a component of functional foods and nutraceuticals. And this was published in the Journal of Medicinal Foods. So the takeaway message is, in the traditional Mexican diet, most of it being very healthy, by the way, where they're eating a lot of gourds, plants, grains, nuts and seeds, beans, lots of beans, and fruits, the blue corn is exceptional for them. It can help you bring down your cholesterol, help you increase the good HDL, help you lower your blood pressure. So all that is important. And University of Texas in Arlington, the right amount of diet and exercise can help lessen damage to the heart and skeletal muscles brought on by malaria. Now, there are parts of the world where you go where you're very much at risk of getting malaria from the mosquitoes. Now, malaria for people who can get the right medications is rarely fatal. It's highly fatal when you don't, and when you've had repeated bouts of this parasite. So there's about 500 million people every year in the world who end up with malaria, and it kills about 400,000. And moderate or high levels of malaria infection typically affect skeletal muscles in your heart. So what they found was, if you start exercising and you get a good, healthy vegan diet, you can actually protect the heart and protect your skeletal muscles from further degradation or injury from the parasite. So that's good, because a lot of people travel and get it. And finally, from Catholic University, bitter orange shows promise as a protector against liver damage. And it's been helped to protect the liver against injury by bile duct obstructions or defects due to its anti-inflammatory activities. This was a study showing a substantial improvement if you used bitter orange extract. And it's easy to get bitter orange extract. So it helps your liver. For all the people who have elevated enzymes in the liver, which are a lot of people, people who have liver fibrosis, sclerosis of the liver, hepatitis in the liver, bitter orange extract, take as recommended, and it can make a difference. And by the way, cranberries were shown to inhibit cancer growth in another study. So, and that's important too. We should be having cranberry concentrate because of its rich flavonoids and the anthocyanins and proanthocyanins and the flavanol, which is one of the most powerful ingredients. It helps kill or trap and destroy free radicals, kill bacteria like E. coli in the urinary tract. But also, we're now finding it does more. Cranberries also contain what is called ursolic acid, U-R-S-O-L-I-C, ursolic. That's a very good anti-inflammatory nutrient that has antibacterial and anti-tumor properties. So when I'm counseling someone who has cancer, I'm always recommending that ursolic acid from cranberry concentrate, unsweetened cranberry concentrate, if you have cancer. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment, we have a lot of program for you. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Now to our environmental segment. This is from The Natural Blaze, from Brianna Acosta. I'll read part of it. The whole article was posted on our website, prn.com, or progressiveradionetwork.com, either way. She's talking about trees, and here's what she says. Longtime forest ranger in Germany, Peter Wolfenberg, has been studying the forest since he was first decided to become a conservationist at 6 years of age. He followed his passion for nature throughout college, where he studied forestry and went on to work as an office manager of a forestry office. Now he works at the forest in a particular part of Germany. He recently published a book entitled The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World, and that made German forests popular again. In the book, he explains how trees have their own network, fondly called Wood Wide Web, that keep the trees in a forest interconnected and cause the trees to react to situations in inexplicable ways. Here's what he said, quote, "These trees are friends. You see how the thick branches point away from each other? That's so they don't block their buddy's light. Sometimes pairs like this are so interconnected at the roots that when one tree dies, the other one dies too." Sounds a bit like how some humans operate as well, such as when elderly loved ones die within days or months of each other because they can't stand to live without the other. The terms used in Peter's book are largely anthropomorphic, meaning he regularly applies human terms and verbs to trees. This is something many biologists who have known for years about the tree's behavior take issue with because his choice of language may lead readers astray. For example, he says the trees talk rather than communicate, despite the fact that scientists say that they don't talk in the traditional way that humans would expect. Nevertheless, Peter's determined to continue using this language for a very important reason. He says, quote, "I use a very human language. Scientific language removes all the emotion, and people don't understand it anymore. When I say trees suckle their children, everyone knows immediately what I mean." Scientific journals and books on the subject often make the reader feel disconnected and can dissuade regular people from learning more about something they can relate to. Instead, with Peter's book, they feel more connected to nature and the forest than ever before. So after reading that trees can count, learn, remember, nurse sick neighbors, and warn each other of danger by sending electrical signals across a wood-wide web, a fungal network, people are more intrigued than ever by the mysterious beings. Their behavior is wondrous to those who have never heard of their abilities, such as the fact that they keep the stumps of fallen companions alive for centuries by feeding them a sugar solution through their own roots. Scientists don't know why this is, but it adds to the curious nature of the trees. Now, I'll share a few of my own experiences. I've noticed something that is similar to Bell's theorem in synchronicity, and I've actually tried this. Now, trees grow at different paces. So let's say that you take a royal. Now, that's a hardy, large palm tree. And you then take a Bismarck, which grows at a different rate. I planted two trees, a royal and a Bismarck, side by side, but 5 years apart. By the 10th year, they were equal in size and have stayed equal 20 years later to this date. I found that's true of virtually all the companion trees. They grew at the same rate. Then took a cactus, and the cactus was on one side of a door, and it was fully grown. But then as it shed, new cactus grew, and very quickly, far faster than what the original cactus grew up and matched it, and stayed then for the next 20 years, absolutely equal, meaning side by side, touching and growing in together. One is not larger than the other. Well, why did one that was years later getting started, why did it grow so fast and then stop when it reached the height of the other one? These are the interesting things in nature. I can only speculate. I do not have absolute truths on that. All I know is that nature still has a lot of things we need to know. But do trees allow us to be healthier? Yes, they do. Being in nature, being close to nature, is part of the healing process. That's why I encourage people, wherever you are, to spend time, especially around trees. It can make a difference. Now, from Dar Jamal, well, before I go to Dar, let me tell you about Carl Grossman. Carl is a journalist. He's an activist. He's a scholar. And he, along with Harvey Wasserman, the two of them, later it was Helen Caldicott and Michio Kaku, have done a great deal to educate the communities, the world, legislators, about the dangers of nuclear power. I commend them because in my book they're all heroes. And when no one else was out there demanding these things be closed, writing articles about their dangers of nuclear power, they were. Well, finally, they deserved their day because Indian Point, the most dangerous nuclear power plant in the United States, just 35 miles from New York City, is going to close, and it's about time. I also want to thank all the people in this audience who on numerous occasions, remember down in Riverside Park, where we had a huge, thousands of people came to the demonstration, where I brought in Helen Caldicott and Harvey Wasserman to share their points of view. Remember when we were in front of the governor's office? Remember when the permit that we had to do the demonstration allowed for only 1,000 people, but quickly it swelled beyond 1,000, and the police were very cooperative and opened up to more space and then opened up again, and as people continued to come, we took the entire block from one end to the other. And afterwards, I went over and I thanked the lieutenant, I thank each of the police officers for allowing us. And the man, it was interesting, just one of these little side events that happened in life. The guy said, the reason that I allowed the expansion here was because you thanked the police for being here, and you all kept the sidewalk open so that the other regular people on the street could walk without interruption. And it was important because we are also citizens. And I'm thinking, gee whiz, all of us could benefit from that. And by the way, I gave all the police a copy of Knocking on the Devil's Door, Our Deadly Nuclear Legacy. And so by working in cooperation, where 80% of the people who came wouldn't have been able to have participated, they were. So just one of those little side things. Here's what Carl says. But that day we talked about closing Indian Point and why. Quote, the good, the very good energy news is that the Indian Point nuclear power plant, 26 miles north of New York City, will be closed in a few years under an agreement reached between New York State and the plant's owner, Entergy. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has long been calling for the plants to be shut down because, as the New York Times related in its story on the pact, they pose, quote, too great a risk to New York City. Environmental and safe energy organizations have been highly active for decades in working for the shutdown of the plants. Under the agreement, one Indian Point plant will shut down April 2020, the second April 2021. They would be among the many nuclear power plants in the United States which their owners have in recent years decided to close or have announced will be shut down in a few years. This comes in the face of nuclear power plant accidents, the most recent, the ongoing Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan, and competitive power being less expensive, including renewables and solar power and wind power. And the whole article goes on. But we are keeping up the effort to try to close all nuclear power plants in the United States. And finally, from Dar Jamel from Truthout, he talks about a moment this month when it was colder in Seattle, 27 degrees, than it was on the north slope of Alaska in the Arctic town of Barrow, 30 degrees. Now, on the day that this occurred, Barrow, Alaska, whose normal high temperature for that day was negative 5 degrees, actually saw a record high of 33 degrees above zero. Now, this is an unprecedented phenomena, and that sums up the direction of where we're going. And as we have stated on this program for years, we are now in chaos theory. In fact, scientists with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration concluded in their annual Arctic Climate Report, quote, "The Arctic is unraveling," unquote. Record-breaking heat in the north has clearly pushed the region into uncharted climate territory. In fact, just a month ago, the heating trend continued, with temperatures at the North Pole spiking to near melting, a stunning 50 degrees Fahrenheit above normal, despite being the darkest time of year with literally no sunlight. Antarctica saw equally shocking developments. Recent NASA photography revealed a 300-foot-wide rift, I've mentioned it too, it's called the Larsen C Shelf, that is going to be breaking imminently. Now, this massive ice shelf will send an iceberg the size of the state of Delaware into the Southern Ocean. So what's the takeaway message? We're hearing words like unprecedented, phrases like we haven't seen anything like this before. And these are not uncommon among scientists studying the ice in Antarctica, where a breakup in the Pine Island Glacier is now revealed yet another mechanism for collapse. And that glacier, by the way, along with so many other massive glaciers in the Antarctic, is melting due to warming sea water from below. And simultaneously in East Antarctica, a region of the ice continent assumed to be relatively intact thus far, impervious to the impacts of anthropogenic climate disruption, two recent scientific reports have exposed some seriously troubling warning signs, the studies each of which focused on a different East Antarctic ice shelf, showed that major melting is already occurring both above and below that could eventually release the ice shelves and thus release all the ice above them on the continent. Given that East Antarctica contains roughly two-thirds of all the ice on the continent, that is really troubling. And the question is, how long will it take for that to happen? And the answer is no one knows. So it's worth noting that by this November, the Arctic and Antarctic had both hit record sea level coverage, and NASA recently released imagery showing how stunningly fast glaciers around the world are melting. Given that glaciers hold approximately 69% of all the fresh water on the planet, the implications for humans, coupled with sea level rise, are obvious. So, on the other hand, you've got President-elect Donald Trump, and who's not into accepting climate change. He says it's not real. Unfortunately, it is. Just a few more thoughts about the Earth. When you think of the impacts on forest, droughts and wildfires generally come to mind. However, we would do well to recognize a lesser known related impact on forests, bugs. A recent study predicts that insects will leave at least 63% of the U.S. forests at risk in the next 10 years. of dying. Let me repeat that. 63% of all the forests in America could be dead in 10 years because of bugs. They represent the largest single threat to biodiversity in the United States. Surging beetle kills the tree. The warmer it gets, the more droughts you have. You have this in species, this invasive species. Quote, there are only one of the few things that can actually eliminate a forest tree species in pretty short order. That's a Harvard University ecologist, David Orwig. And a recent study published by scientists from University of Davis and U.S. Forest Service showed that, disconcertingly, forests are failing to regrow after climate change-driven wildfires that have become larger, hotter, and more frequent across the country. The study shows how recent fires have killed so many mature seed-producing trees across such vast swaths of land that forests are unable to reseed themselves, and they're becoming deserts. Quote, from Kevin Welch of Forest Research, University of California, we are seeing the conditions that are likely to promote natural regeneration. And when dramatic climate change impacts are causing forests in the United States to suffer, trees halfway around the world are simultaneously impacted. When drought, insect infestation, heat, or exploitation causes a significant number of trees to die in one area, the climate and forests in distant lands is also altered. Hence, according to the researchers, if enough woodlands are burned in North America, the consequences of this are felt in Siberian forest. If enough tropical rainforests are cleared in the Amazon, then you're going to have greater drought, greater cold in other areas as far away as Siberia. This is called teleconnection. Quote, when trees die in one place, it can be good or bad for plants elsewhere because it causes changes in one place that can ricochet to shift climate in another place. Meanwhile, another recently published study showed that some plant species in the Himalayas, like the rhododendron, have shown indications that their spring blossom season has been moved 3 months forward. Not surprisingly, wildlife continues to display distress signals in this all around the plant kingdom. So it's getting worse. So what is the takeaway message here? All right, when you look at everything happening in the world, you see that we're getting exceptional rains, flooding, droughts, hurricanes, tornadoes, like we've never had before. So you should be looking at where you're least likely to be impacted in a negative way by any of these changes. You also should consider earthquakes, hurricanes, flooding, and fires. And then that should be the area of your effort to align yourself with a plan B. I believe that people should be looking at hydroponics, growing their own food, having enough left over to have home-based businesses, because there's going to be a greater demand there is right now for organic produce than there's a supply. And also get off the grid, use solar, use wind with new turbines that don't kill birds, don't make noise, and geothermal if you live near a hot spring. And so you have a constant supply of quality food and a constant supply of water. And you're going to meet an awful lot of progressive people because more progressive people are making the move to more sustainable places, and they're not waiting till there's been a catastrophic event that forces them. Their house burns down, an earthquake takes it, a hurricane destroys it. A lot of people are simply saying, I'd like to be proactive and move ahead of the storm. Good for them. It's a wise choice. That's the latest on the environment. And this is the program that provides more insight, information, and positive solutions for health, aging, disease, and environmental issues than any other radio program in world history. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Raindrops, so many raindrops, it feels like raindrops
falling from my eyes, falling from my eyes, since my love has left me.
I've got a special for everyone today. We're just going to take a few minutes to share this, and we have a lot more program to go. Digestive stuff. It is a new product. Why? Because I see so many people making mistakes in how they eat. They're overeating. They're not restricting calories as they should if they cared about slowing the aging process. They're eating wrong combinations. They're eating simple, refined sugars with fat that really mucks up the digestive process. They're not eating quality fibers. They're eating foods that don't ferment, which would be good. They're eating foods that putrefy, which is bad. Just imagine, would you ever eat a piece of meat that someone left out on a curb at 97 degrees and humid for 3 days? Of course you wouldn't. But what do you think is happening in your intestine after 97-degree humid temperatures for 3 days where that meat is rotting? And then you have fat in there, and you have sugar in there. You've got bloating, distension, diarrhea, the itises, ileitis, colitis, spastic colon. It's time that we realize that a lot of our immune system is in our gut. You have 100 billion neurons in your gut. Your gut has a brain. Your skull has a brain. They communicate. You need good bacteria. My contribution to this is digestive stuff. It's on sale, by the way. It's regularly $84.99. It's on sale today for $54.99, the lowest ever. What's in it? What makes it special? Well, how about papaya and pineapple and apples and bananas and bromelain and amylase and lipase and protease and salase? These are all enzymes. And ginger and cinnamon, anise and fennel, holy aloe vera, marshmallow root, slippery elm bark, and 6 billion probiotics of one type, longum, and 6 billion additional ones from L. acidophilus in a delicious natural pineapple flavor and sweetened with stevia. That's it. Oh, and almost 13 grams of fiber. So if you care about something really good for your body, then you'll appreciate digestive stuff. And I don't know many people that couldn't benefit from this. This is a very important one. So digestive tufts, you take one scoop after your primary meal each day. That's how you consume it. It's that simple. Let me give you the number to call in order to get your product. And keep in mind, this is the very, very deep, deep discount. I want people to get the best possible discount they can. And I'm going to offer this until we hit a certain number. I make these in very small batches, by the way. These are not made in large batches. So we're not going to have very many of these left. And then we go back. Get a new batch made. It's always fresh. Write down this number for your digestive stuff and think of all the people who could benefit from digestive stuff. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for digestive stuff. Phenomenally delicious, good for you. 12 billion of the good non-dairy bacteria, that your body needs, the probiotics, the finest digestive nutrients I can find, I put in this formula. I create these formulas for myself as a registered dietitian, as a PhD in human nutrition and public health science, as a clinician in nutritional sciences. I know what can go on in a good way in the body. Now, one other thing. I'm bringing out some new products in the next 2 months. And because I'm a little company and I don't have a national program or marketing out there or catalogs and all, I'm deciding to cut some of the items in my line to be able to introduce new ones. I want to always keep it around total of around 20 products. That's it. So I'm eliminating survival stuff. I'm eliminating greens and grains, and I'm eliminating fiber stuff. Three phenomenally important items. And I'm doing some new products that will take their place. So when I sell out in the next week of survival stuff, greens and grains, and fiber stuff, they will not be back in stock. And I know many of you use them and like them, and rightly so, especially survival stuff. So they're deeply discounted, but they're not going to be discounted anymore. And when they're out, they're out. So if you like these products, especially survival stuff and greens and grains, then call and order them, because when they're gone forever. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. We should be out of all these within this next week, within the next 6 days. But I know some people really like these, especially survival stuff, because you want to have this for the future if there's ever an emergency and you need it. Well, I've only got about 200 cans left, so that's it. All right? Now, let's go over and let's hear from, I thought it would be interesting to hear from Glenn Greenwald being interviewed about what's happening right now. And he's really an outstanding investigative journalist, and he has a different perspective. And he's not a part of the American, you know, liberal left, highly compromised, if you're corporatized, writers.
Hey, everybody, we're really excited to have our guest, Glenn Greenwald from The Intercept, and we're going to talk about everything. So let's get right to it. So I don't know if you get as frustrated as I do about this. We just touched on this topic of Sharia and Islam and people being afraid of it. And I saw you recently on Bill Maher's show, which I, you know, love Bill Maher, and he does a great show. But he seems to fall into that trap of whenever the United States does something, it's okay because we're not religious crazies. But whenever someone who happens to be of a different religion, a Muslim, that it's all because of that and there's something wrong. And they can dismiss our imperialism and all the wars. I mean, right now, Barack Obama's bombing seven different countries. Now we just went into Yemen and Somalia. We're still in Afghanistan 15 years on. Five more years, we get a gold watch. And then we did Iraq, Libya. I mean, we're doing more destruction than anybody else in the world. Chomsky calls our drone program the biggest terrorist program in the world. So the excuse, are you flummoxed like I am, with the ease that smart, intelligent people who are usually on the right side of the issues are able to dismiss America's imperialism and our violence because it's quote unquote not religious? Does that blow your mind like it does mine?
It used to. I feel like I have figured it out just by looking into the face of that evil, ugly monster for so many years. I feel like I've been able to apprehend its soul. It's really, I think there's like a huge irony at the heart of it all. What makes, you know, you use this phrase religious crazies, which Bill Maher likes, and the people that he reads that he thinks are smart, who influence him to think these things, what they say too, this idea of religious crazies. What makes that behavior crazy, this kind of religious fanaticism, is really, it's a form of tribalism. It says the people who are in our group, who share our defining beliefs, who are on our side of conflicts, are justified in doing anything because ultimately we're the ones who are right, we're the ones who are the victims, we're the ones who are battling for good. And therefore, whatever we do, we blow up pizza shops, we, you know, put bombs on buses, we fly planes into buildings, you know, we drown people in cages. All of those things are justified because our ultimate cause is good, and we're fighting against people who are doing evil. That's tribalism. That's a really primitive instinct that human beings have. That's the one of the organizing principles of humanity from the time we began, you know, sort of having society. And what people like Bill Maher are saying is exactly the same thing. It's just the other side of the coin. They're saying my tribe, the tribe into which I was born, the tribe that has defining beliefs that I share, we're justified in doing anything because the other tribe is the bad, evil tribe. And we're victimized by them. We have to defend against them. And so no matter what we do, we napalm countries and kill tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people. We invade and occupy them. We bomb them. We prop up their dictators. We set up torture camps around the world. We put them in prison with no charges for 15 years and counting. Whatever it is that we do, we're justified in doing it. It may not be the right thing to do, but we ultimately have good intentions. And so it's not like we're trying to harm anybody. We're just trying to defend ourselves and our way of life. So the rationale of the two sides, you know, ISIS and Al-Qaeda and whatever Bill Maher might call religious crazies, and Bill Maher and all of his, you know, imperialism-loving atheist mentors, they all sound exactly the same to me. They're all pure primitive tribalists, and their only difference is they just belong to different tribes. And so, you know, no, I don't think it's surprising. I think they've never moved beyond that primitive instinct of removing themselves from the group into which they were born, into which they were, to which they belong, and critically assessing it. They just are like, sort of, you know, like people who are born into a college community where college football is all the rage and are taught to love this team, and they love it through childhood, and then they get to be adults and they go to the games and they cheer, and they can never really articulate a reason why they're doing that other than the fact that it's just what they were taught to do from childhood. That's their team. And I think that's what Bill Maher and ISIS are like. Not to say that they're comparable in every way, but certainly in the specific way that you've asked me about, I think they are.
So I really appreciate you spending this much time, and I'll let you go soon. So let me just get you to this question, because I keep trying to make the point that if Donald Trump is as crazy as everyone fears on the left and is a maniac and all this stuff, why wouldn't Barack Obama try to cut off some of the damage ahead of time? Like, why wouldn't he try to reinstate, I don't know, habeas corpus? Right. So people don't even know that, that we don't. So if he's so crazy, why wouldn't Barack Obama be rushing around to end these wars? Why wouldn't he be like, hey, we can't let Trump take over Syria, Afghanistan, and we can't let him. We got to end these wars. Of course, the answer is you can't just stop killing people willy nilly. You got to take some time to do that. You got to wind it down slow when you're killing people. That's the thing I don't understand. Why isn't anybody in the media even bringing it up, like habeas corpus or the surveillance state? So he's handing over to Donnie Tynahan's Trump the ability to look at my emails, your emails, all our phone calls, all our text messages. That means Rudy Giuliani. That means Steve Bannon. That means all those people can have all the access to all of our private information. And nobody seems to be screaming about it. And Barack Obama seems a little too comfortable with the idea of a Donald Trump presidency.
There's this vast difference between what Democrats are saying they believe Donald Trump is and what he will do, and then what Democrats are doing. So not only is Obama not dismantling any of these unlimited authoritarian powers that he and George Bush spent 15 years together or in succession building up and then fortifying, but he's actually been strengthening some of them even since we found out Donald Trump was going to be president. Just today, the Obama Justice Department defended this expansive definition of the surveillance powers that the president uses. So let's say, okay, Obama is just an institutionalist. He believes in the executive branch. He's been co-opted. That's why he's not going to dismantle these powers he believes in. What about all of the liberal pundits and Democratic Party operatives who have spent, you know, 6 weeks now saying that Trump is a fascist, Trump is Hitler, Trump's going to open camps, Trump's going to dismantle our democracy, who said we should do a recount to see if there was cheating, who wanted to do an electoral college coup? Why aren't they demanding that Obama dismantle these powers? And more to the point, like, you know, they're calling themselves the resistance, like they're co-opting, you know, the language of like actual self-sacrificing, risky, putting your body on the line, civil disobedience of the type they've generally scorned. But they're not actually doing any of the things that constitute resistance. I mean, why aren't they in the street getting arrested? And why aren't they planning mass disruptive civil disobedience? And I think the reason is because they're spouting bullshit and they know it.
Wait a minute, Glenn. You didn't see Keith Olbermann out in North Dakota? You didn't see Keith Olbermann in North Dakota at DAPL? I did. I thought that was him. Maybe it was Josh Fox. I'm not sure.
I can tell you the funniest tweet I think I've ever read in my entire life was, I don't know if you've seen it, but like Keith Olbermann, who, you know, along with like David Frum and like Republican consultants who helped George Bush get elected, and Clara Jeffrey, and Neera Tanden, They're the leaders of our resistance. So they're the leaders. I totally acknowledge their role. And so, and I think Keith Olbermann's like actually like the leader. So anyway, there's this, that, you know, he gives his like completely deranged, you know, broadcast where he does his baritone and talks about like, you sir are a fascist, Nazi, whatever. And the logo, the motto for the show is him wrapped in the American flag. And then it says, like, the resistance. Somebody on Twitter said he's calling himself the resistance, but his body posture is much more like the people who end up wrapping themselves in the blankets that EMTs give you after a traumatic car crash. Like, he's sitting on the side of the road, hunched over, with a flag wrapped around him, like, I'm the resistance, but he actually looks like he's in shock. Like, he's traumatized and scared sitting on the ground. And I think it's a great metaphor for what liberals are. I mean, they've become so coddled. You know, they're so... ultimately, liberals are institutionalists. They believe in properly constituted authority. They don't believe in defying institutions. They certainly don't believe in breaking the law. And so I think their resistance is going to amount to a few hashtag campaigns and some angry tweets. Maybe, you know, I don't know, like Mother Jones will do some kind of like fundraiser where like the resistance hashtag is on the wall and stuff. And that's going to be it. So, if Democrats are willing to follow through to the logical conclusion of their rhetoric, I would have more respect for the things they were saying. But as it is, you know, they're just spouting this with no actions to back it up.
Okay. Now, what do we learn here? We learn that it's very easy for individuals, especially the ones within the corporate liberal democratic community, to state what is wrong with Trump, what he is likely to do based upon his own intemperance and the selections of the people around him. They're probably correct. However, when was the last time you saw the major voices in the liberal corporate community, the people who run the so-called liberal corporations, putting themselves at risk by putting themselves in the front line of resistance, making the sacrifices to take their money out of those corporate banks that are involved in globalization, or to not support candidates that have supported war, intervention, torture, and the dehumanizing processes that go with that. And I have a lot of respect for Glenn Greenwald, and after all, he was the one who got the information from Edward Snowden and then went to the managing editors of The Guardian and said, we're going to publish this. And at great risk, they did. They could have been arrested. They could have been sued. But they put themselves on the front line. Very few people actually will risk arrest and all that comes with that. So when there's a Bill McKibben and there's other Jeffrey Smith and others who are there, Chris Hedges, Cornel West, getting arrested, I have a lot of respect for that. Yes, more often than not, it's a symbolic gesture. They're going to get right back out and continue on with their protest. Maybe nothing will happen. Maybe nothing for a year or two. But I remember when we were protesting against DDT, and I remember when Rachel Carson was too sick to go out and protest, and she didn't like being in the public forum that much anyhow. She was a very quiet and shy marine biologist. But she had discovered something, that embryos were not hatching of bald eagles and fish were dying, and the DDT was extremely pervasive. It would last for decades in the soil. Even when you stop spraying, it would still be there. And I can remember there would be as few as five or six of us at a demonstration. Even the people who were looking would be angry at us and curse at us. But in time, in 1972, we were able to effect enough political pressure and education that DDT was banned. A lot of people were involved in that effort. The same was true with Paul Rudishan, a very courageous person who had no background at all in activism, But he had been in Vietnam. He had become sickened by Agent Orange. He was speaking on behalf of the millions of soldiers who had been exposed to defoliant 245T. And he took their cause on. We had him on the radio over 100 times. And it took years. But one day the government decides, let's give these several million GIs who have been in Vietnam $2 billion, a small amount of money when you realize how many have been affected and how it hurt them. But at least it showed that some good can come. So do I believe that any good is going to come from, attacking Trump? I don't believe so. I believe that Trump is fully capable of destroying himself or the people he's surrounded himself with. It's like they've got 36 great white sharks looking for a nosebleed. When they don't find the nosebleeds, they're going to start eating each other. He is self-destructive. His base will see that. I believe that we have to look for the progressives to come forward, unite, work together, and start at the local levels, take on projects we can make a difference with, and support each other in that effort. And there are a lot of progressives. That's our program for today. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.
Let me hear the worshipers!